Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of a cacafuego to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the need for first-hand accounts, also known as the were you there fallacy.
So, first of all, you might wonder what cacafuego is.
Burning shit.
Yeah, it does sound like a flaming shit, doesn't
it?
That's which I don't think is too far off.
No, exactly. It's got orange and turd-like.
It means a swaggering braggart or boaster.
Right.
Susie Dent, the woman who does Dictionary Corner on Countdown, has this brilliant Twitter feed, and she does kind of unusual words every now and again.
Right.
And sometimes it's something like that I think, oh, that would be a good one to use. So, cacafuego.
And they're all kind of politically aware.
They're frequently topical.
Yes, yes. There you go. Yeah. Cacafuego. It's, it's got to mean burning.
It really does seem like it.
Yeah.
So, yes, the need for first-hand accounts. This is episode 99.
Yay!
And in our multiples of 11 episodes, we do...
Through some kind of weird self-imposed stuff you've identified.
It's become a thing that we definitely do.
Yeah.
Fallacies that I've identified that are not typically found in lists of fallacies. Mm-hmm. So this is one that I have seen talked about as a common argument that is made by, often by creationists... That's where it kind of typically has its home. But I haven't found it in lists of fallacies or been given a name. So I've named it the need for first-hand accounts. And it is basically when people won't accept a point of view, an argument, unless the person making the argument has personal knowledge of the thing they're talking about.
Rather
than the idea that they're just basing it on some otherwise acceptable form of evidence.
Objective truth kind of thing, you know, that pesky stuff.
And our first example from Trump this week comes from a plaque at one of his golf clubs in Virginia.
Yeah.
And between the 14th hole and the 15th tee, there is a flagstone overlooking the Potomac.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a plaque on the kind of base of that flagstone that says it's the River of Blood.
Right.
And the plaque says, many great American soldiers, both of the North and South, died at this spot. The casualties were so great, the water would turn red, and thus became known as the River of Blood.
Yeah.
The thing is, that ain't true. Not by the reckoning of anyone who knows stuff about the Civil War, basically. But Trump's very proud of it. He says, it's my great honor to have preserved this important section of the Potomac River.
Yeah.
But if you ask local historians who know stuff about the Civil War, like, for example, Richard Gillespie, the executive director of the Mosby Heritage Area Association, which essentially covers that area of Virginia.
Yeah.
He says, no, nothing like that ever happened here.
Nope.
The only thing that remotely close to that was 11 miles upriver at the Battle of Bull's Bluff in 1861.
Right.
This just didn't happen. But when the New York Times in 2015 questioned Trump about it and said, look, we've asked historians and this isn't a real thing that happened.
Yeah.
First of all, Trump said, well, that was a prime site for river crossings. So if people are crossing a river and you happen to be in a civil war, I would say that people were shot. Which is very different from it being a historical thing.
Yeah.
It's like, but it just stands to reason, doesn't it? You know,
people cross
the river,
there's bullets flying around, there's a war, people were shot. but they might not have been shot there, particularly if they're going to war 11 miles up the road. You wouldn't be
so
firing your weapons there.
The Times pointed out that while it is quite close to a place called Rouser's Ford, where 5,000 Confederate troops crossed the Potomac en route to the Battle of Gettysburg, no soldiers were killed during that crossing. It wasn't a thing.
Nope.
And that there were no notable Civil War engagements at that spot at all.
Right.
And Trump's response was, how would they know that? Were they there? So,
That
is...
Right?
yeah, requiring first-hand knowledge of historians about whether
something you've made up is true or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And apart from the fact that obviously exactly the same thing can be asked of him and his claim that there was a battle there.
Yeah, yeah. But he said it first, so that's a nah.
But yeah, the point is historians typically don't base their information on stuff they witnessed.
Experience themselves, yes. Because, you know, during your tenure as a historian, you know, as soon as you start out, say you graduated from university age 21 in history, therefore you are a qualified historian, your knowledge of history doesn't start from then.
No.
So, you know, the stuff that you knew about possibly all the way back to age 3, I don't know, you know. You know, I've got 18 years of knowledge. Okay. And then it doesn't get wiped out. All of that history that's been done, uh-huh, then gets wiped out till the next generation come along. But then that only goes from when they're 21 onwards. No, it doesn't. That's not how history is studied and how it works.
No, famously, history tends to go back quite longer than historians' age span.
Yes, there was a fossil found that was like 4 point something billion years old, which kind of, you know, that's a lot longer than most historians are. I mean, I know historians are notoriously old looking because that's what gives them some sense of gravitas. But yeah, nobody's going, you can say that, you can just go, were the dinosaurs? Were you there? I don't think so. Yeah. It's just a childish riposte, isn't it?
So it is possible that these Civil War historians are basing their knowledge of what happened and where stuff happened on things other than what they personally witnessed.
Could be, yeah.
Probably things like documentation that still exists from the time, like written accounts by people who were there,
writing it down so that future historians will be able to read it.
And archaeological digs of various sites where they found evidence of battles and weapons and bones and all kinds of things. There's a lot of things that they can base that kind of stuff on that doesn't require personal experience
to legitimize it. So it is very much a kind of childish response to, well, you've just made something up. So, well, how do they know? Yeah. How do historians know that? How do they? Well, scientists say, you know, they say, but do they know?
And that's the thing. It is an extremely naive question to ask. Yeah. Apart from the fact that it's almost, well, it is. I said almost. It's always asked disingenuously, because anyone who ever asks, were you there, knows you weren't there.
Unless you were, and then you get caught out.
But a far more interesting question, which is going to get a conversation and help everyone find out the truth and learn things, is how do you know?
Yes.
Not were you there, how do you know? Because that might lead you to finding out the person you're arguing with actually doesn't know and they're basing it on some very shaky information. Yeah. Or it might lead you to finding out what they're basing their information on.
Yeah.
In which case, you learn something.
Yeah.
So, a better way to approach this is to ask, how do you know that?
That kind of, and whilst you're saying that, I'm looking at Trump's blank face going, well, no, this is the see, all of history is stuff that he's made up. He's doing that. He was there, so he's made it up. Or he wasn't there, but it doesn't matter because he's made it up. Because actually that history of the River of Blood, he made up in 1975 or whenever it was he bought the place. So it's, for him, that's historical.
That's as good as.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So our second example comes from when Trump was accused in Maggie Haberman's book of shoving White House documents, like presidential documents, down the toilets in the White House. Because, you know, you just, when you're criming, you've got to get rid of the evidence somehow.
Yeah, that's what you do. When the when the feds knock at the door. Yeah.
And you wouldn't want to use one of the many, many fireplaces in the White House. So instead, you shove it down the toilet flush the toilet. Yeah. But he defended himself on Fox by saying this.
They act like they know me, like she knows me. I haven't spoken to her in a very, very long time. She knows me no better than any other writer. But they write books like they know, and then they make things like that up. And there would be no way of her knowing if it were the facts. There would be no way of her understanding that or knowing it. But it's a totally fake story made up by her.
So there would be no way of her knowing it. Now, he doesn't explicitly say she wasn't there. But I feel like that's what he's going for.
Yes, exactly, because that for him is very important.
Yeah, I mean, it's denying that she would have another way of knowing other than being there, kind of.
Looking down the job.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, she is basing it from her own reports on staff members at the White House who she has talked to. Yeah. Who other reporters have also talked to and corroborated that this is what they say.
Eyewitness statements.
That they were frequently called to the Oval Office and to the residents to...
Unclog the toilets.
Unclog toilets that were full of documents.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there are other ways to know stuff other than seeing them yourself.
Well, in the similar way of reporting the evidence of written records from the time of the Civil War, so that if you're reporting other people's eyewitness accounts... And that they've been kind of verified and confirmed as most probably being true. And then you talk about that. It's not necessary for you to see it if you're talking about somebody else who has definitely seen it.
I mean, the other thing, which I'm not going to get into because I could do an entire, like, Wonder Woman 84 length bonus episode about it, is that eyewitness testimony is actually one of the worst kinds of evidence you can get. It is praised and seen by jurors as the gold standard in many cases, but actually it's terrible. And what they call circumstantial evidence, which is evidence that doesn't directly prove a person did a thing but sets up the circumstances, is actually way better and way more useful. It includes things like fingerprints and DNA and all kinds of stuff like that, and it's way more reliable in almost every case, although, again, more time on the extended episode about this would be on the actual unreliability of a lot of forensic evidence that is seen as reliable by lay people a lot. Generally,
it's much better
the eyewitness evidence that people put forward and say, well, that proves it, is one of the worst kinds of evidence you can
get. It was a member of the staff snorting cocaine in the car park. Actually, it wasn't. Can't have been. No, but I saw them. Well, yeah, okay. Mm. Were they of the other political party? Yes, they most definitely were. Okay. Mm.
Yeah.
So even if Trump is demanding eyewitness evidence, were you there to have seen it? He's kind of skipped over the fact that people have a certain cognitive bias and that affects what they see. Or how they interpret what
how they remember
see.
What they've seen. Yeah. There's lots of issues with it.
So demanding that is no way of giving you the proof that you're demanding. But, you know, that's you weren't there, man.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
So when I was thinking about this fallacy, I think I might have come across the actual reason for the thing that's been nagging at me recently about how people have been reporting to me that suddenly there's a lot more COVID. And I've been thinking, it's kind of nagged at me that that's not the case, because I think this stems from a version of this fallacy, which is it's needed these people to have personal experience of other people I know getting COVID for it to mean that COVID is worse, and in some cases, real. So there's that demand for their own personal experience.
They're overvaluing their own personal experience, but compared to what they hear from everyone else.
Yes, the statistics published in the newspaper, which, strangely, they're no longer being published in the newspaper. So and everybody's going, oh, well, it's much more prevalent now. Because I know three or four people that have just, everyone's dropping like flies. And go, well, what, compared with the hundreds of thousands before that we didn't, none of whom we knew. And now it's just got real. This shit's got real.
I mean, if you look at the stats that aren't being published in the newspapers,
yeah,
while it is a lot lower than it was a couple of months ago, it's a lot higher than it was during periods, let's say, when people were wearing masks and staying in their houses.
Yes. Yep. Indeedy.
The government was saying, yes, it is a real thing.
Yeah.
Whereas now they're like, that's fine. You don't need to worry about it anymore.
We've just got to live with it. Yeah. Because they've just, you know, they've gone all Pontius Pilate in an Easter-related way over it. They go, that'll be fine. Just wash your hands like we are of the entire thing and we can move on. Nobody's interested in that anymore. He's too busy looking after his own career. Speaking of which, in speaking to the Scarborough News on the 13th of April 2022, Scarborough and Whitby MP Sir Robert Goodwill declared his support for Boris Johnson. This was after he'd been in receipt of, Boris, that is, of a fixed penalty notice issued to the prime criminal after hosting parties during lockdown when they were illegal. So he was found guilty and charged and fined for being at an event.
Being ambushed by cake.
Being ambushed by cake, yeah. During lockdown when they're not supposed to be. And in response, Sir Robert Goodwill still said, oh yeah, no, he's fine. He'll be fine. Because nobody said to me that because of that event, somebody got infected and died. It's not like he went to an old people's home or hospital without testing and spread the disease around, and as a direct response, people died. So, I mean, that, apart from the what the actual fuck, so you kind of go, and I think at the root of that, what the actual fuck response, is that there are two occurrences of that of this fallacy in there. One, nobody has personally told me that because of the event someone's died. So because nobody has... So he's appealing for a first-hand account. Nobody said to me that someone has died as a direct result of Boris Johnson holding this event or attending this party or being ambushed by cake. So therefore, having the event was fine. And then the two is it's not like he went anywhere and personally infected someone and gave them COVID and killed them. So
yeah, there's two aspects of that that I find also what the fuck it's like saying it's first of all dying is quite a high bar. Fair that it is more noticeable. But it doesn't mean he didn't give someone long COVID or result in you know that kind of thing. But it's like saying drunk driving is fine so long as you don't kill anyone. Yeah. If you hit them a bit, but they're all right, that's all right.
Nobody has so long as nobody you dies. Were directly, well, yeah, maybe just, because yeah. The dead men don't talk. So, you know, you're not going to be... It'd be fine if you hit somebody in the dead of night on an empty motorway after between the pub and your house.
And you think it's a deer and you just and drive you, on... It's
fine.
It's fine.
Nobody's personally told me because mentioned. Of that. Nobody's mentioned it. Yeah, yeah. So I need an actual first-hand account of somebody saying that what
fucking
you did.
Hell.
But yeah, yeah. There's an appeal for what Johnson did to have a direct first-hand effect, for it to be meaningful, rather than Johnson's behaviour to be condemned as an actual breaking of the very law about not holding parties during lockdown that he put in place. So, yeah, he had first-hand experience of the law being put through the statute books about it being illegal to hold any gatherings during the lockdown period. And then he held gatherings during the lockdown period. This against the context, incidentally, that during lockdown, Scarborough consistently ranked the highest for COVID fixed penalty notices and illegal indoor gatherings in North Yorkshire, with more than 630 handed out by the end of May 2021. North Yorkshire police were called to a number of lockdown house parties, with one man even attempting to hide in a loft. So it can't have been Boris, because he would have been hiding in a fridge.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And in talking about this whole thing and the Allegra Stratton resignation and all that kind of stuff, Robert Hutton, writing in The Critic on 8th of December 2021, mentions it's a bit like the quote about remembering the 60s. And he said, if you had to resign over the Downing Street party, you weren't there. So our second example is on LBC's talk radio on 24th of April, so last week. Rachel Johnson, yes, Boris's sister, agreed with haunted pencil and minister for the 19th century, Jacob Rees-Mogg, who is calling civil servants back into the office and not to be working from home.
I'm in the middle of an administrative bureaucratic nightmare at the moment to do with probate. And the delay for probate, because people are working from home, I think is up to a year. The way that driving licenses and all this is being held up, it's holding up people's lives because people are sitting at home working from home. They're on their Pelotons. They're not on their bikes trying to find jobs. They've got jobs, but they're on their Pelotons. They're watching Netflix and they're doing home working. Now, I know there'll be people who say it's much easier to combine childcare or caring for elderly parents with home working, and I take that point.
So I think there's two in there. There's one, her entire reasoning of the fact that this is holding people's lives, as she says, is because of her own experience waiting for probate for a year. That could be because her father, Stanley Johnson, is not actually dead. So that's that bit where she's saying, okay, so here's my first ad account, and that's all the proof I need that the entirety of the civil service that processes driving licenses and death certificates and all that stuff, it's all grinding to a halt. And then in what feels like a flip of that need for a first hand account is an assumption of her account that they're riding Pelotons and watching Netflix. And she says, now I know there'll be people who say, but she doesn't say, now I know there'll be people who say, how the fuck do you know that? Were you there? There's that thing. But she knows that they're working from home, but they're not working. They're riding their Pelotons, watching Netflix and organising daycare for the elderly and their children. And
yeah,
not working from home.
I mean, the thing is, studies show, when you actually look at the science, that working from home increases productivity.
Yeah.
So chances are, in the aggregate, apart from the fact that Pelotons are fucking expensive, the vast majority of people, Rachel Johnson, don't have Pelotons. But In the main, people aren't riding their Pelotons and watching Netflix. People are getting on with their fucking work. Yeah. And they're doing it with the benefit of not having to do sometimes like an hour or 2 hour commute.
Yeah, exactly.
And by doing that, are therefore more productive in not just many cases, but on average. Productivity as a whole goes up.
Yeah.
With an increase in home working.
But then that's talking to experts
But they weren't there. They've just studied the aggregate of how much work gets done. Also, I don't know how much personal experience Rachel Johnson has of probate, but a year isn't that long. It's a fucking nightmare, probate.
Yeah, exactly.
My great uncle died 5 years ago and his will still isn't sorted out.
Wow. Because they have to sort out all of the possible descendants.
There's all kinds of crap that goes on.
And that's not down to the people working from home. That's down to just the complications of trying to trace relatives.
All manner of stuff.
It's nothing to do with her first-hand account of the difficulty she is having, which is leading her, a one-time critic of Boris Johnson, to agree with Rees-Mogg, who's just being a bully and getting people to go back to work because that's what it says in their contract of employment. So speaking of experts and relying on them for evidence. Our next example, Femi Olawole, who's a British political activist, co-founder of the pro-European Union advocacy group Our Future, Our Choice, talked on his Facebook channel recently about how the government is failing to support its people cause Brexit.
People are struggling to heat their homes and feed their kids and fuel their cars. And the government can help. They can do stuff like cutting taxes, raising benefits, introducing a basic universal income. So why aren't they? The only reason they wouldn't pay for that is if they thought that we'd struggle to pay off that debt in the future, which means they're not giving people the help they need because of how they think the economy will do long term. And this government knows that there is one thing affecting the UK economy long term, and that is Brexit. And the Office of Budgetary Responsibility, i.e. the economic brain of our government, has said the damage that Brexit is doing to our economy long term is twice as bad as the pandemic. Now, obviously, the Tories are going to tell you that that's just Remainer nonsense. But how would they know that? Boris Johnson isn't an economist. Motherfucker studied poetry at university.
There you go. So that the garbled phrase there is Remainer nonsense. So in the Brexit referendum, there was the Leave campaign and the Remain campaign. And ever since we've left, all the stuff that Remain has kind of said, yeah, these are the things that are going to happen, have come true, but they're dismissed as Remainer nonsense. So that Office of Budgetary Responsibility, they're the ones that are saying, yes, actually, the Brexit is going to affect us much worse than the pandemic by, you know, a factor of 100%. And that's dismissed as Remainer nonsense. And he's saying, well, how does Johnson know that that's nonsense? Is he an economist when he studied poetry at university? So he's requiring him to have first-hand experience of economics.
So this is something that we'll come back to in The Fallacy in the Wild.
Right.
But it is part of this fallacy, in my opinion, is you know, do you personally have expertise on this subject that you're talking about?
Yeah.
And I think it is more valid to ask that question when the person you're asking it of is going against the consensus of experts.
Right.
If they are going along with, if they are saying experts say this, then saying, well, are you an economist? It's reasonable to say no, but I'm saying what economists say. I am reiterating that. If you are arguing with the expert economists, then I think it is quite reasonable for someone to say, are you an economist?
Right.
Because they're saying, okay, by what expertise are you arguing against the people who we can acknowledge their expertise? In that sense, I think context is quite important to whether this is a fallacious argument or not. And in this specific instance, because Boris is saying the experts are wrong and dismissing what they say, I think Femi's okay on more solid ground, at least, saying, well, you know, on what basis can you claim that? Now, that doesn't mean Boris doesn't have a basis for claiming it. He may be citing other experts. But if he's saying it just off his own back and saying, you know, I don't believe these experts.
Well, exactly. And Femi does go on to say this.
They rely on their experts to judge economic decisions, and the Office of Budgetary Responsibility, those are their experts.
They are the experts.
Yeah.
So in a government, when you don't have expertise, you have experts that brief you from their expertise about the things to do. So during the pandemic, which we've talked about before, Boris said, well, yeah, we're going to follow the science until such point as science deviated from policy. Once they realised that actually what it meant was that they were becoming a socialist government and paying people's wages and supporting out-of-work people and nationalising travel and all that kind of stuff. So when policy and science diverged, they stopped listening to the experts. And in this case as well, if they listened to the experts, Femi's argument is that they would have to admit that Brexit isn't working.
Yeah.
And they can't possibly do that because that's the entire backbone of how they got into office.
Yeah. If Boris is citing other experts, he's he's doing it wrong because the government's experts are the ones who are saying this is not a good thing.
Yeah. I suspect he isn't citing other experts.
No, he's
just thinking we've got to not, well, experts in PR possibly, you know, the haunted pencil himself might be being seen as an expert, whether or the you know, the cabinet office, where they're going, oh, for Christ's sake, we can't tell anybody that. Let's come up with something else. Let's get you off to Ukraine and then we can blame it all on the war. Which, you know, wouldn't you know it, that's what happened. Santana there, of course, with She's Not There.
In The Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. And as I mentioned, this is an argument often used by creationists. And our first example comes from Ken Ham's debate with Bill Nye, the science guy. Ken Ham is proud of using this as an... He, like, teaches it to children as a thing to say when your science teacher says dinosaurs existed millions of years ago, is to say, were you there? And here he is during the debate with Bill Nye.
A lot of what you were saying was really illustrating my point. You were talking about tree rings and ice layers and just talking about kangaroos getting to Australia and all sorts of things like that. But see, we're talking about the past when we weren't there. We didn't see those tree rings actually forming. We didn't see those layers being laid down.
So he's claiming that all of the things that scientists use to measure years and see what happened during those years, we can't rely on because we weren't there. We didn't see happening.
To see them happening.
Now, the ice rings, because obviously this is referring back to something that Bill Nye said, so I've done a quick edit of the stuff that Bill Nye was saying about ice rings, just to give you an idea of what he's arguing against here.
My scientific colleagues go to places like Greenland, the Arctic, they go to Antarctica, and they drill into the ice with hollow drill bits. And we pull out long cylinders of ice, long ice rods. And these are made of snow. And by a long tradition, it's called snow ice. And snow ice forms over the winter as snowflakes fall and are crushed down by subsequent layers. They're crushed together and trapping the little bubbles. And the little bubbles must needs be ancient atmosphere. There's nobody running around with a hypodermic needle squirting ancient atmosphere into the bubbles. And we find certain of these cylinders to have 680,000 layers. 680,000 winter-summer cycles. Let's say we have 680,000 layers of snow ice and 4,000 years since the Great Flood. That would mean we'd need 170 winter-summer cycles every year for the last 4,000 years. I mean, wouldn't someone have noticed that? Wouldn't someone have noticed that there's been winter-summer 170 times one year?
And it's not just winter-summer 170 times one year. It's like that's average over the last 4,000 years since Ken Ham claimed there was a great flood.
During which people were eyewitness to that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's within recorded history. And he talked about the tree rings. He goes on to talk about how there are trees that are older than Ken Ham claims the Earth is. And we know that from counting the rings. Yep. And we see their growth cycles within the body of the tree. And the kangaroo thing that he brought up was about how if... In 4,000 years, kangaroos had got off Noah's Ark in Turkey and travelled to Australia over land bridges that no one's ever been able to find.
Yeah.
We would expect to see kangaroo bones and kangaroo fossils along that route.
Along the way. And reports of them and people possibly doing drawings of them.
Yeah, whereas in fact we only find evidence that of kangaroos in Australia, ever.
Yeah.
So Ken Ham's assertion that the reason that we can't rely on this evidence of the ice layers that we see being laid down year by year, and we can count 680,000 of them, and we can count the tree rings that are 9,000 years old, and we can look for kangaroo fossils. We can't rely on any of that because we weren't there.
Yeah.
It's a pretty shitty argument.
It's a shitty argument, but equally, because he's basing the existence of the world only being 4,000 years, well, we weren't there. Ken Ham, can't have been there because he's not 4,000 years old. So how does he know that there was nothing before the flood and now there and that and everything was after the flood?
Well, creationists have a clever riposte to that. When you say, I wasn't there. Were you there? They say, we know someone who was there, which is God. Who was an eyewitness to all of it. And he's the most reliable eyewitness because he's God.
Yeah.
And he wrote down everything he knows in a book.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a very bad argument. But there you go. So our second example comes from This Is Spinal Tap. And this is when Janine, who's kind of the Yoko Ono of the group, David St. Hubbins' girlfriend, is complaining about their latest album.
It might have been better if the album had been mixed right.
It was mixed wrong, wasn't it?
You couldn't hear the lyrics on all of it.
You don't agree that you can't hear the vocals?
No, I do not agree.
Well, I think maybe it's interesting that she's bringing it up.
Well, she'd like to hear the vocals.
I mean, it's like you're saying, you know, you're using your wrong conditioner for your hair.
It looks
sort of... Well, it's not quite... You don't do heavy metal in Dublin, you know?
Nigel questions her expertise by well, first of all, he says, were you there? You know, how do you know it wasn't mixed?
Were you there when it was mixed, wrong?
And they make the reasonable point that she is making a judgment based on listening to it and, you know, what you can hear. And fair enough, kind of. It is. You can tell if something has been mixed so poorly that you can't hear the vocals, and hearing the vocals was the intent, then it's been mixed wrong. You don't necessarily need to know about mixing itself. But yeah, Nigel questions her expertise and says it's a bit like me asking you about your hair conditioner. And and then she kind of undermines her own expertise.
I think the conditioner bit is that it kind of inconsistent comparison kind of thing. The reason she's saying that is because her boyfriend is the vocalist.
Yeah,
that's the thing. That's kind of the point that actually Nigel kind of almost touches on. He said, "Well, no, it's interesting you're bringing that up because that, you know, whereas if the like the bass player, nobody says, we can't hear the bass, but you know, the bass player's wife doesn't get a look in."
So our third example is actually something that we covered in our bonus episode on one of the right wing YouTube channels, Stephen Crowder.
Yes.
And this was a video of Dana White, the UFC guy, who was giving a press conference, and he was talking about how hard it was to get hold of monoclonal antibodies and also ivermectin. First of all, he was talking about monoclonal antibodies and how when he'd had COVID, it was really good for him, it helped him, and now you can't get it anymore. And the reason you couldn't get it anymore was nothing to do, in fact, with the fact that he and Joe Rogan had been talking about it, which was his theory, but was the fact that the doctors, the experts, had looked at it and decided it actually wasn't that helpful for the Omicron variant, so they wanted to keep them back in case there was a more dangerous variant.
Would be more effective
that
on
it,
them,
exactly, yes. That it would actually help people with.
Yeah.
So that was the nefarious reason why you couldn't get hold of it anymore. But he pivoted to also talking about ivermectin, and a member of the assembled reporters asked him a question.
And we're not talking about experimental drugs or things that you said. This stuff's been around. I mean, the ivermectin...
You're a doctor?
The guy won the Nobel Peace Prize.
You're a doctor?
Huh?
You're a doctor?
No, but there's plenty of doctors that do...
Here he comes.
I just asked a question. Are you a doctor?
No, but I took them and they both work for me, so why shouldn't I be able to take them again?
First of all, the guy who developed ivermectin did not win the Nobel Peace Prize.
No.
He did win a Nobel Prize, but for developing an antiparasitic drug, which is not what ivermectin is being used for when people use it to treat COVID.
Antiviral, yes.
And the fact that in Dana White's opinion, it helped him when he had COVID, when he also took monoclonal antibodies, which have been proven to help, is not evidence that it works and not a reason that everyone should be able to take it. But the question, are you a doctor, as I was saying before, is asked more appropriately when someone like Dana White is talking against the consensus of experts. And he him saying, well, ivermectin worked for me, so everyone should be allowed to have ivermectin. Everyone should be prescribed ivermectin, in fact, for COVID. It's not that unreasonable to say, are you a doctor? Because... he is expressing a medical opinion which goes against the majority of doctors.
Yes.
But equally, to express an opinion about something which has been as widely reported and as widely studied as these kinds of as COVID cures, whether it's hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, Paxlovid, whatever, you don't necessarily need to have personal medical expertise. You can have read a sufficient amount about it, understood the mechanisms, and understood what the medical consensus is, and be expressing an opinion based on that. You don't have to be a doctor. If you're going to say doctors are wrong and we should be allowed to do it, having personal medical expertise would be in your favour. But as we've seen with Stella Emanuel... yeah. The doctor, the actual doctor, who reckons that COVID is because of, what was it, demons fucking you or something like that? It's not a guarantee.
No. that having actual medical training would give you the unquestioned ability, I guess, to kind of put forward a medical opinion on the fuckability of demons. So I was looking through, for some reason, the story that Alec Baldwin on the Rust set and the gun and all that kind of stuff, and came across this tweet. Baldwin had gone into hospital and all that kind of stuff.
No, Joel Souza went into hospital. He got shot in the shoulder, the director of the film.
Oh, okay. Yes. Because he also got... That's right. Yes. And Francis Fisher tweeted, director Joel Souza told me he's out of hospital. And then somebody with the username Petty tweeted, oh, well, did he actually talk to you? Oh, you are so cool and must be a really important person. What a fucking poser you are. And then Francis Fisher went, I'm in the cast. Do some research. So there's that appeal to, do you really have a first-hand account, do you really have a relationship? Were you really there? Did you really ask? And it just goes, I'm in the cast. Which is lovely. It's kind of something really nicely satisfying about that. And then the other one I found was Frederick Forsyth, who writes military-based thrillers, all that kind of stuff. He was writing in the Daily Express in 2010, and he was saying, so in May, and he was saying, last October, Paul and Rachel Chandler, foolish perhaps but harmless, were seized by Somali pirates on their tiny yacht and towed towards Somalia. They were transferred by the thugs to the pirates' mothership, but a few yards away was the Royal Navy Fleet Auxiliary Wave Knight. The Royal Fleet Auxiliary had a squad of armed and ready-to-go marines with submachine guns and a heavy MG. Some sort machine of gun. Big gun? Machine gun. Oh, okay, there you go. That's one of those big fuckers.
Yeah.
They begged to be allowed to rescue the Chandlers, but the captain foolishly asked London's permission, refused, and again, then it was too late. Ever since, the MOD has claimed it would not have been possible without endangering the Chandlers. How would they know 6,000 miles away? My information is that the Marines know damn well they could have done it, and the Chandlers have been living in a living hell ever since. I believe the Marines are still fuming, but silently, and the poor Chandlers may well die in agony down there. More knee-trembling cowardice from London? Like Basra, this needs exposing. So there's something about the how would they know because they weren't there, that he's levelling against the Ministry of Defence because they're 6,000 miles away in London and this was somewhere off the coast of Somalia. And then also he's placing himself there because he's saying, I know because my information, well, where's that come from? You know, a government source has told me, well, you've just made it up there. My information is that the Marines know damn well they could have done it. Yeah. And it's and the whole thing is smacks of him pretending he's a member of the SAS.
Yeah, he might as well say, about stuff. If I was writing it, this is how it would have happened.
I would have had them don't do it. Exactly. Yeah. And it's just, it's kind of, and it's so apt that it's in the Daily Express, which is a kind of Daily Mail wannabe. Uh-huh. You know, it's like fuming against the bureaucracy that stops people being saved. And and wouldn't you know it, 10 years later, the story about Somali pirates by Frederick Forsyth.
So before we move on to fake news this week, I just want to say a quick thank you to a listener, Meredith, who pointed out that one of our adverts that was played on one of our last episodes was from a Christian apocalypse website called Rapture 2061.
Wow, that's kind of, in a way, it's kind of ironically apt.
Kind of,
really,
yeah.
Kind of, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's if we were going to put in a comedic segment that sort of, in the middle of all this critical thinking, then there is this thing that is outrageously uncritical of thought.
Yeah,
that would be the thing we would do. Is exactly.
Yeah. So somewhere between a Stacey Abrams ad and the beginning of our episode was this thing for this Christian apocalypse website,
wow.
which appears from what I've seen to be kind of a mix between trying to sell this book about the rapture and grifting, selling kind of baker buckets and that kind of stuff, like survival stuff.
Yep. Yeah.
So obviously that isn't the kind of advertiser we would choose. No.
Kind of stuff we would study
and
point out the problems with.
So firstly, thank you for pointing that out, but also please kind of do be vigilant about that kind of stuff and do tell us, because
we can't hear them here.
The adverts are programmatic. Our media hosts, Red Circle, deal with all of that kind of stuff behind the scenes and dynamically include ads that are geo-targeted and targeted presumably to particular demographics and stuff like that. So we don't necessarily hear the same. In fact, we definitely don't hear the same ads that you hear. So I don't always know what's being advertised, but they do have ways that you can restrict various categories. And we have restricted religious ads. We always have. So this one had either been miscategorized, slipped through the net or whatever. I got in touch with the media hosts and let them know about it. And they've said, sorry, it won't happen again. But in case it happens again.
Let us know.
Please do let us know. Yeah. If you hear something that you think is a bit woo, or you know, just you wouldn't expect us to be happy with advertising
this stuff. Yes,
let us know.
Yeah,
and we will make sure that kind of ad doesn't get played again.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
See, I could have been winning all this time. See, you don't know, man. You weren't there.
Except I was there. I was there for all of it.
Except you were. Yeah.
Through thick and thin.
That's where my argument falls to the ground.
Yeah, that's what's wrong with your argument. Yeah. So
This
week we are going with moments from the interview between Donald Trump and Piers Morgan, which is the kind of matchup where you don't really care who wins so long as someone dies. Piers Morgan has a new show called Piers Morgan Uncensored on a new TV channel called Talk TV. It started last week, and the intro to his show is UK based actually, you can watch it, I think, on probably Fox Nation.
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah.
And the intro is so the day to day. It is ridiculous.
Right. Yeah.
But in his first two episodes, he had an interview that he did with Trump. And so these are some quotes from that interview.
Some insanities.
Number one, he asked Trump the kind of the question du jour.
Yeah.
What is a woman?
Yes.
And Trump said, someone who is biologically a woman. I think most Americans can figure out who's a woman and who's a man. The birds and the bees stuff, it's been a while, but I think I remember the general gist of the differences. To have a hard time answering that question is kind of odd to me. Someone who can give birth to a child, a mother, is a woman. Someone who has a uterus is a woman. It doesn't seem that complicated to me. I mean, a woman has a vagina, right?
Fucking needs to check. Yeah, it's been a while. Was that it? Wasn't that it? Yeah. Okay.
Statement number two, he was asked about immigration.
Yeah.
And he said, we have an invasion coming in. This is bigger than any army is coming in. And it's not 2 million people. I believe it's 10 or 12 million people a year. At the end of Biden's term, I think you'll have 30 to 40 to 50 million people will have come into our country. Many of these people are not people that would ever qualify for any country. Many are people released from prisons from other countries.
Okay, that accelerated quickly. God, it's not two, it's 10 or 12 a year. There'll be 30, 40, 50. I can talk it up to 120 if you like. Well, not people that would ever qualify for any country.
Uh-huh. Okay. And statement number three.
Yeah.
This was about when he visited the Queen.
Right.
And he said, we had a great time. And then they honoured the United States, but they honoured me that night, which is really the honour of the country, and it was at the top level. And I sat next to her, and we talked the whole night, and somebody said, we've never seen her smile so much. We had a great time. She was laughing and smiling. They said they've never seen her have such a good time at a state dinner. You know, normally they're a little boring. Okay, this wasn't boring.
Well, none of that's true, of course, yeah. Because if they'd put in a sir... That's like, yes, sir, we've never seen her smile so much. Even more, obviously.
Tears in their eyes.
Yeah. She was slapping her thigh. She was banging the table. Couldn't believe it. Her sides were hurting from laughing so much. Okay, and the two... Well, for me, it's a toss-up between... one and three being the one that you made up. And it's going to turn out to be two, isn't it? It's the bigger than any army is coming in. Seems very Trump-like. And the birth to a child one. That, because there's a gag in there. I think I remember the general gist of the differences. It's been a while. It's too good of a gag for Trump. Sat next to him all night. Somebody said, but then again... okay, I think I'm going to go with number three is the one you made up.
Okay, so the other two...
But the Queen, yeah.
You seem more convinced by number
two. More convinced by number two, yes.
Number two...
Yeah.
Is...
Yeah.
Real.
We have an invasion coming in. This is bigger than any army is coming in. And it's not 2 million people. I believe it's 10 or 12 million people a year. At the end of Biden's term, I think you'll have 30 to 40 to 50 million people will have come into our country. Many of these people are not people that would ever qualify for any country. Many are people released from prisons from other countries.
Come into our country.
Yeah.
I believe it's 10 or 12. And I think, so it's...
Now, there's one thing just, that he says there that is true.
Yeah.
It's not 2 million people.
Right.
It's not any of the other numbers he says either.
No, it's not 2 million. Nowhere near that. Yeah. I believe it's this, and I can make a worst case by just making up something else.
Uh-huh.
You know, and he's either very clever or he's just stupidly thinking that if he says I believe or I think, then that makes it real. Or he's very cleverly covering in case somebody says, oh, yeah, well, it isn't that. I said, well, I only believed it. I only thought that.
Yeah.
It's not actual fact. Yeah. Because I wasn't there. Yeah.
So there was a report that said that there have been almost 2 million encounters with immigrants trying to cross the border by Customs and Border Patrol since this time last year.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But of those people, 80% were sent back kind of immediately.
Right.
So,
right.
So it's actually about 400,000 who have entered the US during that period.
Who weren't sent back.
Yeah, who weren't sent back.
Right.
Those 400,000 are seeking asylum or going through processing to you know,
become citizens. To,
yes. So it's not 2 million. It's about 400,000. It's not 10 or 12 million either.
Nor is it 30, 40 or 50.
It won't, yeah. There's it no won't reason be. To assume it'll be 50 million. 50, there's only 320 million people in the US. That would be a massive that kind number of
50 million, isn't that
to add.
The population of the UK? And we got 50 million people?
Yeah, it's getting on there. We've got about 70 million we've got.
Yeah,
but that number of people would illegally enter the US in 4 years. It's fucking insane.
Yeah.
Also, it says many are people released from prisons from other countries. There's no evidence of that whatsoever.
No.
In all of the Americas, in North America, Central America, South America, there are currently roughly 3.8 million incarcerated people. That's who are in prison or in jail.
Yeah, yeah.
Over 2 million of those are in the USA. Or incarcerated in the USA. So so there are more incarcerated people in the US than the entire rest of North America, South America and Central America put
and
together.
And also, more people incarcerated in the USA than are trying to get across the border.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So the idea that there would be any proportion of 50 million people who had recently been released from prison... Like, his implication is, because he goes on to say we're like a garbage dump for the world, that people are being released from prison, like, kind of directly into the US.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, you're out, but you have to go straight to the border.
You have to go straight there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The number of people being released from prison in other countries every year is a tiny fraction of a percentage of the ridiculous inflated number of people he thinks are getting into the US.
And that and many of these people are not people that would ever qualify for any country.
Yeah.
Well, the ones that are coming through are the ones that do qualify.
Yeah.
If you don't qualify, you don't come in. That's how it works.
Yeah, but of course this is all because of Biden's porous border, which is...
Right, right.
Somehow...
Yeah.
Porous, despite the fact that Trump almost finished the wall. He was like 2 or 3 weeks away from finishing the wall, which was going to solve immigration on its own.
Exactly, yeah. It's all completed, yeah.
Yeah, but somehow, despite not having removed any of the wall, it is now much worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Than it's ever been.
Porous. Well, that's because we saw the designs for the wall. This is basically a very broad picket fence. So you can just, you know, you can walk through it. Yeah.
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 So you also think number one is real?
I do.
And number
one? Is.
Is.
Yeah.
fake news.
Oh, man. Should have gone with that. The bloody joke about the... mainly because I wanted him to say it, I think. It was the joke. It was the been a while, but I think I remember the general gist. I was right.
Yeah,
too good
now,
a joke. Too good a joke for Trump.
I didn't actually write that.
All right, right.
That is a compilation of two actual Republican politicians who were asked, what is a woman? Pretty soon after the Ketanji Brown Jackson hearings, where Marsha Blackburn disingenuously asked the question. The first half is Lindsey Graham.
Oh, what? Yeah. Yeah.
And the second half, starting at someone who can give birth to a child, is Josh Hawley.
Jesus Christ.
Who said that someone who has a uterus is a woman. And then the reporter said, so people who've had a hysterectomy aren't a woman?
Nice, yeah.
And Hawley went, yes, no, would they? I mean, a woman has a vagina, right? So,
yeah. But if you get gender realignment surgery...
Uh-huh. So, yeah, various examples available online of Republican politicians finding it's not quite so easy to define a woman. Trump
exactly.
did have a go, though.
Oh, right.
Because he was asked this question in relation to transgender athletes,
right?
Specifically Leah Thomas, the swimmer. And this was the answer he gave.
I'm not going to respond to the question, but a woman is... A woman is somebody that swims at a certain time and doesn't get beaten by 38 seconds by somebody that wasn't even a good swimmer as a male.
So I'm not going to respond.
Not going to then respond.
But
in a very angry way. Yeah, yeah.
A woman is someone who swims a particular time and doesn't get beaten by 38 seconds by someone who wasn't even a good swimmer when they were a man.
A woman is somebody who doesn't get beaten, but they all got beaten.
But they all, yeah.
Because he's saying that a woman who doesn't
get
beaten.
It was very confused.
But the woman who won by 38 seconds didn't get beaten.
All the people involved in the race were women.
Yeah.
But the one he's specifically talking about winning by 38 seconds that he says is a man is also a woman. But also all the people who she beat are women. So that's just weird.
Yeah, yeah.
But this idea that Leah Thomas was not a good swimmer, and I'm doing this in quotes, when she was a man, pre-transition, is not true at all.
Yeah,
she was an excellent swimmer.
Yeah,
pre-transition, she is still an excellent swimmer. She is by no means the best swimmer now. You know, amongst other women.
Yeah,
the particular race that he's talking about, where Leah Thomas won a race by 38 seconds. That did happen. It happened in the 1,650-yard freestyle at the Zippy Invitational, so not even an NCAA division race.
Yeah.
That race takes 15 minutes to complete. It's a long race, so 38 seconds isn't that huge a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a record, because the record is held by Katie Ledecky, who swam that distance 54 seconds quicker than Leah Thomas.
Wow.
Significantly faster.
Yeah.
Amazingly fast, that woman is. And Leah Thomas's times for in that race, the 1650, she is now 7.2% slower than pre-transition.
Right.
And if you look at the average times for men and women racing 1650 yards, women are 6% slower than men.
Oh.
So she has
slower
dropped.
Than average.
Yeah, she's she has personally slowed down more than women are slower than men at racing that distance.
Right.
She did win a 500 meter race or 500 yard. I don't know if they do it. I guess they probably do them all in yards in the NCAA.
Yeah,
but again, didn't break a record. She just happened to win that race that she was in, the NCAA Division I race. And her time was roughly 10 seconds short of the women's record.
Right.
Coincidentally, pre-transition, her time that she would race 500 yards was roughly 10 seconds behind the male record.
Right.
So she's... About the same as she ever was.
Yeah.
She's not kind of, you know, got some kind of huge advantage over, quotes, biologically female swimmers. She's a good swimmer who has always been a good swimmer, continues to be a good swimmer, isn't majorly breaking records or taking home all of the trophies or anything like that. Yeah. All of this ridiculous idea that she's kind of, it's totally unfair that she is now racing against women and that's ridiculous and unfair is clearly bullshit when you even look at the numbers at all.
And that's the problem with asking Trump anything. He will come up with bullshit about anything. And that's, for Piers Morgan's purposes, that's perfect. Because he can just fire all the triggers for the red-faced gammon rust belt voters. One often thinks, what is Piers Morgan's motivation? And then one, of course, it slaps you in the face. You go, oh, it's pure narcissism. That's all it is. It's just down to, how can I get up the ratings? How can I be up there with the Alex Joneses and the Tucker Carlsons and all that stuff for being outrageous and employed? Basically, he just needs to be employed.
So you thought that number three was fake news, but number three
so that would be real. No.
Here it is.
We had a great time, and then they honored the United States, but they honored me that night, which is really the honor of the country. And it was at the top level, and I sat next to her. We talked the whole night, and somebody said, we've never seen her smile so much. We had a great time. Mm. She was laughing and smiling. They said they've never seen her have such a good time at a state dinner. You know, normally they're a little boring. Okay, this wasn't boring.
There are pictures of the Queen with Trump.
Definitely
she looks
not laughing.
Utterly pissed off the entire time. I haven't seen a picture of her laughing with Trump. There's loads of pictures of her laughing with the Obamas.
Yeah. Yeah.
And pretty much every president since 1953. But
yeah, she's seen a few. She has seen a few. Not seen one. Given that she was laughing and smiling all night long, that it was the best. No. Surely there would be pictures of that.
Yeah, you know? Somebody said we've never seen her smile so much.
Yeah,
for fuck's sake.
It wasn't the idea
that the Queen hasn't ever had a better time than having dinner with Donald Trump. That's basically treason.
She's had dinner with a lot of people. That's basically what she does, and have dinner with people.
Yeah.
And to compare all of those with a Cacafuego, I don't think so.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah. Even Royal Correspondent Nicholas Widgell would probably agree with us, yeah.
Which means, unfortunately...
Oh, man!
That you did not... get that one right.
No.
So it takes you back down below 50%.
Ay, ay, ay. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's episode 100 next week. So, you know, you could get back up to 50. 50 out of 100.
Well, I'll do it, kids. I'll do it. I'll do it for you lot. I'll do it. You know, none of you shouting at the radio, at the wireless, going, well, it's plainly that. Why aren't you doing it? You try doing this. You're not here. You're not here. You weren't there, man. Yeah.
And it's time for the part of the show that this week, at least, is called The Ministry of Truth is Not a Logical Fallacy.
Yeah.
Because the government have decided to start up a thing where they have a go at fighting disinformation and misinformation.
Yeah,
under the authority of the Department of Homeland Security. Because
how do peddlers of mis and disinformation feel about that?
They've not taken it well.
No.
They've taken it personally.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
But yeah, so what we're going to be talking about here is Tucker Carlson's response.
Yeah.
Which
legally, you have to. Whenever you watch it, you got to know that he is absolutely just doling out mis and disinformation, and that's legally true.
Tucker Carlson is so insane.
Yeah,
it would be wrong of us to try to describe his response. So I've got some clips
right
from from his response to the news that the government is attempting to do something about the level of essentially foreign interference in elections that we saw in 2016 on Facebook and things like that. And here is how he set it up.
Joe Biden cannot continue to control this country if you have free access to information. It's that simple. Biden certainly is not improving your life. He's not even trying to improve your life. So the best he can do is lie to you and demand that you believe it. But to do that, he needs to make certain that nobody else can talk, because if you were to hear the truth, you might not obey. How is Biden going to pull that off? It's not easy. Well, one option would be to get men with guns to tell you to shut up. Most Americans probably haven't thought of that because this isn't Africa or Eastern Europe. This is America, and we don't do things like that here and never have. More precisely, we haven't until now.
And we're still not.
Yeah.
Would be the real way of fixing
that. Exactly, and we're still not doing it. Or, actually, that's exactly what America's been doing all this time.
Yeah, yeah.
The Americans aren't used to that. No, that's exactly what they do. Yeah, yeah. Shut up or I'll shoot you.
Yeah. This whole segment is such an exercise in accelerating truth.
Absolutely. Oh, my God, yeah. And that whole thing about, well, you know, we can't expose you to... He's shutting down, exposing you to the truth, and yet you're able to tell us about this in your national broadcasted TV station, yeah, which earns a lot of money from subscribers. That kind of shutting down the truth. Isn't it also to do away with mis and disinformation being spread by people traffickers trying to convince people to go across the border in a similar way that our Home Office is failing to dissuade people from listening to people traffickers? So they're kind of saying, what we're doing is we're hitting at the heart of those unscrupulous people that are trafficking people from, you know, the whole of Europe through France. And what we're doing is getting the asylum seekers when they arrive on our shores, and then we're shipping them to Rwanda. But we're not doing it on commercial airlines, because none of the commercial airlines will agree to do it. So what we're doing is spending your taxpayer money to hire private jets to do that. So, and that's what that's doing, is hitting at the heart of the people traffickers.
Yes.
Yeah. Not. Yeah.
You wouldn't know any of that stuff from listening to Tucker, because apparently it's all about shutting down anything that isn't the mainstream narrative, which isn't at all what this is about. But he carries on.
Here's DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas.
We have just established a mis- and disinformation governance board in the Department of Homeland Security to more effectively combat this threat, not only to election security, but to our homeland security.
Oh, so one of America's top law enforcement officers just announces to the Congress that actually we're going to be policing what you say, and everyone in the room kind of nods, oh, yeah, it's totally normal. But here's what he didn't say. So America's told us that disinformation is a threat to homeland security. Now, he's the head of the Department of Homeland Security, so presumably he would know, since assessing threats to homeland security is his job. But what he didn't tell us is how he's defining disinformation. So here you have this new and terrifying thing that the Biden administration is so concerned about that it's created a new agency to fight it, but Mayorkas never said or even hinted as to what it might be. So the man in charge of the disinformation governing board never defined disinformation. It's almost unbelievable when you think about it. Would you declare war on a country you couldn't name? Would you sentence someone to death for a crime you couldn't describe? Of course you wouldn't, not if you were a sane and decent person.
Again, accelerating truth took it from... He didn't, in that, 7-second clip we played, define disinformation. Therefore, they can't define disinformation, which is exactly like sentencing someone to death for a crime you can't describe.
Or declaring war on a country you can't name. Both which America has done.
yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't be tricky, too difficult to prove.
But that's fucking insane. Just because he didn't specifically explain what disinformation is in that bit, the point is they are taking these clips out of context.
Yeah, yeah. And do you know what they're doing with them? They're turning them into misinformation.
Absolutely.
That response that Mayorkas gave
was to a direct question from a Democratic representative for Rhode Island, Jim Langevin, who said, Mr. Secretary, can you tell us what the department's doing, the DHS, what you're doing to shore up election security from Russian cyber interference, give confidence to the committee and the American people we've got this and we're ready to protect and defend our electoral process? And that was the answer that Mayorkas gave of we have established this governance board to effectively combat this threat. That's the threat they were talking about.
Yeah.
Not we are going to monitor what you Americans, what you think. Congress say and decide whether we think you're allowed to think it or not, and then we will come with guns and stop you from thinking it.
Yeah.
Not any of that at all.
No. But Carlson is aimed at those people that continue to subscribe to Fox Nation and his shows, and that's all he's worried about. So, and as we've discovered from watching not The Social Contract, but all sorts of other documentaries about social media, is that they're geared to the algorithms for anger. If you get angry about stuff, then you get more of that in your feed, and that gets popular and is monetizable and all that kind of stuff. If you're happy about things, less so. So, and Carlson is exploiting that kind of algorithm.
Oh, absolutely.
If he had any shred of integrity, he would kind of go, and I've been peddling this kind of disinformation all this time, and I'm doing it right now.
That's why I'm so worried about it.
Yes, exactly. And I'm doing so right now in order to divert your attention away from that because I'm worried about my subscriptions.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the level of scaremongering that he does,
yeah.
I think this is the kind of pinnacle.
But now Joe Biden is president and everything is different. So today, to herald the coming of the new Soviet America, the administration announced its own Ministry of Truth. This will be called the Disinformation Governance Board. Laugh if you want, but just to show you they're not kidding around here, this board is not part of the State Department or any other agency focused on foreign threats from abroad. No. The Disinformation Governance Board is part of the Department of Homeland Security. DHS is a law enforcement agency designed to police the United States and that, by the way, has a famously large stockpile of ammunition. So it's not a joke at all.
The DHS
yeah.
is not an organization designed to police the United States. There's a name for the organization designed to police the United States.
Yeah.
It's called the police.
Yeah. Clues in the question. Yes. Yeah.
They are absolutely an organization that deals with threats from abroad. That's kind of the point. The US Customs Service is part of the DHS. Immigration and Naturalization is part of the DHS. TSA is part of the DHS.
Yeah.
The fucking Coast Guard is part of the DHS.
Yeah.
The Coast Guard are not men with guns. Well, they are men with guns, technically speaking, but they're not a law enforcement organization designed to stop you from thinking what you want to think.
Stuff outside the mainstream.
The fact that some sections of the DHS have law enforcement powers.
Yeah.
Does not mean that that is what the DHS is as a whole. They also have responsibility for cybersecurity. So that's really why it's part of the DHS.
Yeah.
And so the fact that this is part of the DHS rather than part of the State Department, which wouldn't make any sense, because that's about negotiating with other countries, not protecting your borders and your cyber borders. It's not an indication that therefore men with guns are coming for you if you don't accept everything Joe Biden says.
Yeah. Wow. And you kind
fucking
of think
insane.
It's it's completely bonkers. And the thing is that, you know, the whole kind of Soviet America thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, to what end is he, what's the point of this? It is the point to get Trump back in.
I mean, what's the point of any of Tucker Carlson's shit?
Yeah, what's the point of any of it, frankly? Yeah. Boy, for a moment, setting that to one side, theoretically. Yeah.
Assuming there is a point.
Yeah.
What would it be?
Is it?
Well,
because Trump is even members of his own tribe, when the game was up, kind of went, yeah, we went along with all his which is, you know, fundamentally mis and disinformation all this time. Some of them still are going, the election was stolen and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, there are countless people that are going to be arrested and all that kind of, it's not happened. And so there are still, Trump and the Republicans are the bastions of mis and disinformation. They are the experts of that. That's what they do. And here's Tucker Carlson doing exactly the same in order to usher in a new Republican epoch of mis and disinformation.
Yeah. I mean, you can totally see why he's threatened by it. There's no question about that.
Yeah, yeah.
I have seen some suggestion, and I'm scared to the extent that this might be realistic,
yeah,
that Tucker is gearing up for a potential
run
political
for office.
Career. Yes.
No.
A
makes
potential
sense,
presidential run, even.
Makes sense. You know, he's right-wing enough for the Republicans to kind of go, oh, yeah, and you've got a TV show, haven't you? Oh, yeah. And you're not Alex Jones. So, yeah, maybe, just maybe. No. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if the Department of Homeland Security clamps down on mis and disinformation, you know, they might have something to say about
they might
of Fox News.
Accidentally kind of rush him into his political career.
Yeah,
in the same way that Seth Meyers did when... He took the piss out of Trump at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
And Have I Got News For You had Boris Johnson as a host.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
It's dangerous stuff.
Oh, man. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
In today's Republican Party, being a liar is not just acceptable, it's a requirement for the job. But if you want to be a top Republican, like House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, just lying isn't enough. At McCarthy's elite level, you have to also lie about the lies you tell, and then, if possible, lie about the fact you lied about that. New York Times reporters Alexander Burns and Jonathan Martin revealed last month that they have a book coming out and therefore have information that is vital for everyone to know now that it might benefit them financially. That information included the claim that McCarthy told other Republican leaders after January 6th that he would be pushing Trump to resign. Realising that made him sound like he valued democracy more than the opinion of a whiny loser, McCarthy couldn't let the allegation stand and immediately issued a statement saying, "The New York Times reporting on me is totally false and wrong. It comes as no surprise that the corporate media is obsessed with doing everything it can to further a liberal agenda." Which was undermined a little bit when the audio of the conversation was released, in which he said,
"The only discussion I would have with him is that I think this will pass. And it would be my recommendation you should be done. I mean, that would be my take, but I don't think he would take it."
But McCarthy expertly pivoted to lying about the lie he told, claiming it wasn't a lie because he didn't actually talk to Trump about it, which coincidentally proves that what he said on the phone to Liz Cheney was also a lie. Tucker Carlson briefly noticed that at some level of the inception-based lying system, McCarthy was less than 100% in Trump's pocket and called him a Dem puppet. But otherwise, it doesn't seem to have harmed his standing in the GOP.
Convicted criminal permanently wearing a rubber mask of Stan Laurel, Roger Stone, and fat pillow-flogging Rupert Pupkin tribute act, Mike Lindell, both made triumphant returns to Twitter in the wake of Elon Musk possibly, is he, will he, really buying it. In the name of free speech, Stone announced, "I'm back, bitches," and Lindell said, "All those fake accounts in my name, they're fake. This is the real one, and I'm back." making a permanent stand for freedom of speech in the wake of their being booted off for spreading mis- and disinformation about the 2020 election and viciously attacking the press for reporting Russian involvement in the 2016 election, the pair of them lasted barely half a day before they got suspended again for breaking the making a new account in your own name after having been banned previously for being the very person you are rule. Of course, they all got huffy, but we didn't really hear about it because, ha, 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 they're not on Twitter. Though Lindell is on his own platform, Frank Social, which appears to be as inaccurately titled as Trump's Truth Social. I hope Elon keeps the Twitter brand name. Somehow Musk Social sounds like it would stink.
In today's Republican Party, the one place where lying seems to be a bit less acceptable is when you're under oath, which is presumably why Marjorie Taylor Greene kept it simple during the recent hearing about whether she should be allowed to run for re-election given her support for overthrowing the democratically elected government. It's not that she didn't lie, don't be so ridiculous. It's just that she claims she didn't remember basically anything about anything she did around the beginning of January 2021. For example, while she apparently remembers that nobody in her office provided tours of the Capitol to insurrectionists in the days before January 6th, she's a little hazier on whether she texted Mark Meadows to suggest Trump declare martial law. While that seems like the kind of thing that would stick in your mind, you have to remember that this is a woman who spells martial law M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L. So she's not exactly the smartest insurrectionist in the box. We know she spells it that way because we have the text messages that she claims not to remember sending. Which is a bit inconvenient for her, but probably won't matter because nothing seems to anymore.
There's that scene in Idiocracy where the future parliament rules on some life-threatening decision or other in the only way they know Americans can. Monster trucks! Of course, the everyman from our time is left dumbstruck at the inanity of what's become God's chosen country. Well, it walks among us now. Jezebel.com reports that this weekend's Stronger Men conference in Springfield, Missouri, exists to empower and motivate men to live out God's view of manhood and be the best husbands, fathers, and leaders God has called them to be. Among the frequently asked questions on the conference website are, can my son come with me? And can I gather a group of men at my house to watch the conference with me? As Jezebel reporter Laura Bassett points out, men, if you have to go to the Stronger Men's Conference website to ask whether you're allowed to have friends over at your home to watch it together, I'm concerned that you have some emotional problems that can't be solved by monster trucks and pyrotechnics. At $119 a ticket, that's what you get. A peculiar gospel-powered spectacle of electric guitarists slung atop a scaffold tower a la Mad Max Fury Road, shrieking, "Here we go!" as a monster truck lamely drives off the end of a ramp onto some cars whilst flames go up in the air. If Christianity and masculinity need the adhesive power of expensively wrought sooty nasal bookers, then yep, I am too worried about who men really are.
Not satisfied with banning books about babies not being racist and unicorns pretending to be horses, Florida's answer to what if mediocre white male fragility was a person, Ron DeSantis, is targeting maths. Or, since you Americans only have one of them, math. Florida State Board of Education rejected 54 of the 132 math textbooks submitted for consideration because they contained references to critical race theory or included social-emotional learning. Various news outlets, including the Tampa Bay Times and New York Times, scoured the textbooks for problematic material and, hard as this may be to believe, were unable to find any references in the largely elementary and high school textbooks to the academic framework taught in law school about systemic racism. Some of the books did acknowledge that people from Vietnam or Africa exist. One suggested learning about polynomials using a data set of responses to Harvard's implicit association test, which looks at hidden biases, including racism. Most of the other books appear to have been banned for including social-emotional learning, which is the frightening and dangerous concept that fostering empathy and compassion helps people learn. It seems to have been targeted because it has been shown to be particularly effective in schools with a diverse population. And if there's one thing Ron DeSantis doesn't want to be accused of, it's helping minorities.
Social emotional learning, complete anathema to the Republican Party.
Yeah. I refuse to learn anything socially or emotionally.
Socially, yes. Especially if it's particularly effective in schools with a diverse population. The results of the Economist/YouGov poll this week found the following to actually be held true by the US voting public. Top Democrats are involved in elite child sex trafficking rings. When asked among Republican respondents, 52% said it's either definitely true, 20%, or probably true, 32%. Even though the Mediaite report says whilst most Americans don't believe this statement to be true, alarmingly, among Democratic voters, 13% said it's either definitely true at 5% or probably true at 8%. And among independent voters, 30% said it's either definitely true 10% or probably true 20%. An even greater percentage of Republicans believe that, regardless of who is officially in charge of the government and other organisations, there is a single group of people who secretly control events and rule the world together. Among Republican respondents, 54% said it's either definitely true at 60% or probably true at 38%. Among Democratic voters, 28% said it's either definitely true at 9% or probably true at 19%. And among independent voters, 40% said it's either definitely true 10% or probably true 30%. The report doesn't say how many respondents there were to the poll, nor whether they were all inmates of Arkham Asylum. But one can only hope that the QAnonsensical, schizophrenic, narcissistic idiots they question are chained up, good and proper, and not running for office. Some hope.
Yeah, the scariest thing for me in that is that 5% of Democrat voters
think it's definitely true
that top Democrats are involved in elite child sex trafficking rings, but are still Democrat voters.
Yes, yes.
Stop voting for them if you think it's definitely true.
Yeah.
I mean, arguably, stop voting if you think it's probably true.
Yes, yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ.
The scariest bit for me was that the independent voters, but they're going, it's probably true. Yeah, it's probably true.
Oh, I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly that.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, yes. Oh, my God.
Back in 2016, Republican Senate candidate for Ohio, J.D. Vance, called himself a never-Trumper and said he thought Trump might be America's Hitler. But that was before he saw Trump completely fail to revoke Obamacare, fumble a pandemic response resulting in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Americans, lose humiliatingly and foment an insurrection. So now he's fully on board. And since Trump doesn't have sufficient brain capacity to retain the memories required to hold a grudge, he's endorsing Vance in his Senate run against Josh Mandel. In fact, Trump travelled to Ohio at the weekend specifically to hold a rally about how very much he endorses J.D. Vance and definitely not Josh Mandel, who you should not vote for if you like Trump. And I don't think he could have been any clearer about it.
You know, we've endorsed Dr. Oz, we've endorsed J.P., right? J.D. Mandel.
So, if you're a Trump voter in Ohio, remember, ignore the bits where it says J.D. Vance and Josh Mandel and write in J.D. Mandel or J.P., whatever. If the former president can't be bothered to check who he's endorsing before he does it, why bother to check who you're voting for?
Exactly. He's just more concerned with the check itself. Yeah, so I'm going to turn up and I'm going to say, what have I got to say about who? J.P., J.D., Mandel. Yeah. Meanwhile, over here in the UK, just when you thought the Tory party couldn't get any weirder, Tory MP Neil Parish resigned this week for looking at porn on his phone while at work. Eventually, in true Boris fashion, he was going to wait for the investigation to complete. He finally said the situation was that, funnily enough, it was tractors I was looking at. I did get into another website that had a very similar name and I watched it for a bit, which I shouldn't have. But my crime
biggest crime is that on another occasion I went in a second time, in the actual House of Commons, during the day, with people there, but it was all right. He wasn't doing it in such a way that other people could see. He does have some sense of decency, as he says. I mean, I have 12 years in Parliament and probably got one of the best reputations ever. Or did have. Well, quite. Similarly, whilst thinking there's nothing wrong with fucking us all over at his workplace, Chancellor Rishi Sunak has signalled support for a windfall tax on energy firms if they fail to use their profits, which have been hugely inflated by the high price of oil and gas, for the benefit of the UK. If companies aren't going to make investments in our energy security, of course, that's something I'd look at, he told the Mumsnet website. Might work. Look how successful trickle-down quantitative easing was in convincing us poor saps that big business was actually doing something about levelling up and closing the gap between rich and poor after the last crisis, and not just lining their offshore accounts. And ahead of certain defeat in local elections this Thursday, May 5th, our midterms in a way, Tory Party Culture Secretary and actual Cabinet Minister in actual charge of tackling misinformation, Nadine Dorries, tried the distraction game by tweeting a picture of Keir Starmer eating curry alongside another Labour Party member during lockdown and boiling with rage that all the focus had been on good boy Boris. Problem is, Keir is pictured sitting next to Frank Dobson, who died in 2019. Yep, a well-educated, highly qualified class act, our government.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com, and if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know, and if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts, or simply tell one other person in person about how much they'd like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our straw man level patrons Steve Bickle, Schmutz, Mark Reiki and Amber R. Buchanan, and our true Scotsman's level patrons Kaz Tui, Andrew Houck, Max Beaver, and our top patron Lauren. Thanks so much for your support, people. It's really very appreciated.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.